And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
And welcome, everyone. Greetings. It's great to be back. Yes, another week of apologetics. Man, I hope everybody had a great weekend. I know I did last Saturday. I think I mentioned that I was going to attend. I actually had a book table at the Midwest Catholic Apologetics Conference here in Southeast Michigan at St. Cyril Methodius. And it was awesome, awesome conference. This is the sixth one the in running. And I was privileged to be a speaker in, I think, the first two, maybe three of them, along with some other great guests like and people we've had on the show, like Steve Ray and Marcus Grody and Pat Madrid and others. last Saturday, I was privileged to have a table next to the great master apologist Trent Horn. It was kind of cool to rub elbows, so I don't know if Trent listens to the broadcast, but if he does, buddy, it was a lot of fun. Great hanging out with you. Also, Stephen Piskrowski, Father Ben Lukey. And by the way, I bugged Trent. He's going to be back on the show. And I talked to Father Ben. He is such an outstanding priest and homilist. And he, as a seminarian, knew Mother Teresa. In fact, he drove her around sometimes on around Rome, St. Mother Teresa, and actually experienced a miracle. And Father Ben has such great stories. And he's also a very good apologist in his own right. So Father Ben agreed to come on Hands-On Apologetics. I just got to give him the dates and work it out. But I want to introduce him to you because chances are he's very well known, I think, here in the Southeast Michigan area, Ohio, Midwest area, but maybe not so much further out east and on the West Coast. So I want people to learn about him and introduce him. Because a great, great guy. So thank you. If anybody's listening, by the way, that was at the conference, it's great to meet you. Thank you for stopping by the table. I handed out a whole bunch of Virgin Most Powerful radio cards. So I'm sure we're going to be getting a lot more listeners in the area. People are really excited to hear about the show and all the shows that are Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Great stuff. It's just, you know, one of the things I am so grateful to God every day. I thank God in prayer for all the amazing people, amazing friends and people that I meet. I pinch myself because of, just so many good people. And I'm truly blessed. And I'm truly blessed, by the way, that you listen to this program. So thank you. And speaking of great friends, coming up on the other side of the first break, a good friend of mine, Stephen Weidenkopf. He is a historian, and he just recently wrote a book called Timeless History of the Catholic Church. In fact, I hold a copy for those watching on live stream on Facebook and YouTube. You get to see this. And by the way, shout out to you guys. Welcome. Thank you for watching. Great book. We're going to talk to Steve about that, about church history, about writing church history, about how people can dig into church history. And by the way, this is your chance. If you have any question on church history, a matter of church history, give us a call, 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. You can also send an email. We won't be able to do it live with Steve, but nevertheless, if you have any questions, shoot us an email at questions@handsonapologetics.com, and we appreciate hearing from you. It's nice to know. In fact, I got some very nice emails, met some new people through emails. Loads of fun. And today we're going to talk about Finding the Fallacy in Meet the Early Church Father. Every episode, Hands-On Apologetics, we have to do our apologetics workout, right? Get the brain firing, get the mental mojo going, so to speak, because after all, this is Virgin Most Powerful's apologetics dojo, right? So we have to learn our moves and counter moves and just thinking clearly. All right, so... And by the way, hi to everybody on YouTube. Finding the Fallacy, this is kind of funny. So I'm going to share this with you. The fallacy for today is called the slippery slope fallacy. the slippery slope fallacy. And, you know, as always, I always not only consult my own books on fallacies, but I also go on the web and just to make sure I get the nuances and stuff right, or at least try to get them right. And I ran across this. This is pretty, it's an interesting discussion of it. This is from yourlogicalfallacyis.com. And so usually it's pretty good, but this one was really interesting. I think they nail the slippery slope fallacy. So what is the slippery slope? It is when you, if you allow A to happen, if you argue this way, if you allow A to happen, Z will eventually happen too, and therefore A should not happen. Okay, and we hear this argument quite a bit. You know, if we allow something to take place, there are certain inevitable consequences, and it would just become so bad that we should never even consider allowing whatever to take place. Now, it can be used fallaciously, okay? It can be used in a way that's really not right. Now, this website points out that the problem with this kind of reasoning is first that it avoids engaging with the issue at hand. Instead, it shifts attention to hypotheticals and extreme hypotheticals at that, okay? And because no proof is presented to show that such extreme hypotheticals will in fact occur, the fallacy is really kind of an appeal to emotions, you know, it appeal to fear, and it's just a way to not address the problem but kind of get around the problem by unsubstantiated conjecture. Okay, fair enough. So slippery slope is fallacious when you're trying to find follow the logic of something that you're constructing hypotheticals that really don't necessarily follow. Okay. Now, here's the funny things, folks, is this website gives an example. Okay. It says, Colin Closet asserts that if we allow same-sex couples to marry, the next thing you know, we'll be allowing people to marry their parents and their cars and even monkeys. And that's the example of a slippery slope fallacy on your logicalfallacyis.com. Well, notice something. It's like now, you know, here maybe a couple of years after the fact, now that same-sex so-called marriage is legalized, we do have these things following. There are cases of children trying to marry their parents, believe it or not, or siblings marrying each other. I'm not sure of any people trying to marry their cars, but we read an article right here on Hands On Apologetics about a fellow who wants to marry a hologram. And same thing with maybe not monkeys, but certainly pets. So these things actually did follow. So why do they follow? Well, because Colin Closet, which I assume would be a made-up name, actually got it right that by redefining the essence of marriage, obviously other things could fall in that redefinition, and so they would naturally follow. And they did follow. So it's kind of funny that this website gives this the slippery slope fallacy, but actually the example itself shows that the slippery slope argument, you know, following things through their natural conclusions may not be fallacious. It may actually be a good way of arguing. But the difficulty, folks, really the bottom line is, if you're going to make hypotheticals that follow, you have to show some real causative links why they would necessarily follow. That I think that's really the bottom line. So that's our finding the fallacy for today, the slippery slope fallacy. You know, lots of fun here, lots of fun. I try to make this fun. I mean, logical fallacies generally aren't that fun, but they're interesting, aren't they? All right, so let's move on to our next segment, which is to meet the early church father. The early church father today is St. Peter of Alexandria. He lived roughly about AD 311. He's bishop of Alexandria around that time and a native of Alexandria, Egypt. He survived the persecutions of Emperor Diocletian and served as a confessor for suffering Christians. He was made head of the famed school of Alexandria, right? This is the same school that other people, famous people like Origen and Clement of Alexandria were the heads. However, he was a vigorous opponent of what later became known as Origenism. We spoke about that later, along with St. Jerome, another opponent of Origenism. when he received his appointment as bishop, he composed a set of rules by which people who had lapsed, who had fallen away from the faith during persecution, might be readmitted. And thus, in 306, when the persecutions ended, the persecutions began yet again, Peter fled the city, and his chief critic was installed as Bishop of Alexandria. And this starts a schism within the church in Egypt. He returned back in Alexandria in 311 after a long persecution and was soon arrested and beheaded by Roman officials acting under the decree of Emperor Maximin. So he's called to the seal and complement of martyrs, and he is the last Christian slain by Roman authorities. Eusebius of Caesarea described him as a model bishop, remarkable for his virtuous life and ardent study of the scriptures. And by the way, he's one of those saints that is venerated not only in the Catholic Church, but also among the Coptics, the Egyptian Christians. So that is our early church father for today, Saint Peter of Alexandria. Very interesting saint. I think probably a saint you may have heard of, but certainly he's not a common household name. But nevertheless, thank God for him. And Saint Peter, please pray for us. Coming up next, everybody, we're going to talk history, namely church history, with historian Stephen Weidenkopf. Like I said, if you have any questions, give us a call and ask Mr. Weidenkopf, and I guarantee he has an answer for it. Stay tuned.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. Well, you know, if you have any questions on church history, you're going to love our next couple of segments because we're going to talk to a fellow who I think knows more about church history than pretty much any person I know. He's an amazing mind. And that is our next guest, Steve Weidenkopf. He's a lecturer of church history at Christendom College Graduate School of Theology and the author of several books, including The Glory of the Crusades and The Real Story of Catholic History. Both of them are by Catholic Answers Press. You may already be familiar with some of Steve's work if you've watched the video series, which, by the way, he's the creator and author of, called Epic, A Journey Through Church History. And it's basically an adult formation program on the 2,000-year history of the church. And he also came out with his latest book called Timeless, History of the Catholic Church, put out by Our Sunday Visitor. Let's see if I can hold that without giving glare. So please welcome and welcome Steve Weidenkopf to Hands on Apologetics. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Gary. How you doing?
I am doing fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a pleasure to have you back. Last time you were on, we were talking about the Crusades. So,
exactly.
I'm really excited about your book. So let's talk a little bit about, how did you come up with the idea for this book?
Yeah, well, it was kind of the fruit of, my last over 10 years or so teaching at the Christendom Graduate School. And I realized that, while teaching that class, there really wasn't in print a, one volume kind of, easy to use narrative based history of the church. I mean, there are some very, very good volumes of church history that have been written, let's say in the last, 20 plus years or so. Including the History of Christendom series by Warren Carroll, the founder of Christendom College. That's a fantastic work,
yeah.
But it's multi-volume, and each volume is, easily 600 plus pages with extensive footnotes, and it's written in a great narrative style, so it is kind of easy to read, if you're really passionate about the subject, but it is kind of daunting, right? And
yeah.
There's been a few others that have come out, one-volume ones that have come out, I guess, in the last few years, but not one that really is, I thought could be used by both students as well as just read by the general Catholic public, or just even not even Catholic public, the public as a whole. You don't have to be Catholic to read the book, obviously. But and so I thought, this is a good idea. This would be a good thing to have and to do. And so, I got my feet wet writing the Crusades book, and then another follow-on book, which was that apologetics book on church history, the real story of Catholic history, and that had a different feel to it. So each of those books, were either very specifically focused on one particular historical topic, like the Crusades, or, a short little articles, basically, in the second book about how to answer certain objections about church history. But then I thought, the next logical step, I guess, here, and it feels also a need, would be to write this one volume, narrative of church history. And thankfully, our Sunday Visitor was open to the idea, obviously, and we were able to get it published.
Yeah, that's a big problem. I know, years I've been doing apologetics and having book tables. People say, I want to learn about church history, but I don't want to have to wade through a multi-volume set or read a book that, is secular or something. Do you have a single copy, an overview? And for years, I think it was, A Compact History of the Catholic Church by Ellen Schreck. That
mm-hmm.
was the one
Schreck.
That I was kind
mm-hmm.
of handing out. But the problem with Dr. Schreck's book was it was a little too thin, right? There wasn't a lot of meat and potatoes, and I thought it hit some very good points, but I don't know if it really encapsulated all of the important points. It kind of hit the highlights, but it skipped a lot too. And your book, I mean, this is perfect size. I'm holding up for those watching on live stream, but if you can see it, it's definitely a doable read, and you've done a great service. Another thing, Steve, is what I love about it is it's church history from a Catholic perspective, which is very different than if you go to one of those big chain stores and you pick up a secular work on church history. Can you describe for us like what the difference would be if a secular person wrote church history as opposed to like your work or Warren Carroll's work?
Yeah, sure. It's, you know, Warren Carroll in his, I think it was the sixth volume, has a really interesting appendix where he talks about the principles of Catholic of Catholic history, right? You know, the writing of Catholic history. And I kind of summarize those a bit in the beginning of my book here, Timeless. And yeah, the real difference between, you know, a historian who has, you know, who has faith and who approaches his work from a faith perspective, as opposed to a historian who is, let's say, more secular in their viewpoint, is, I mean, the biggest difference really is you're going to see, you know, three kind of elements, I guess I should say, in a Catholic historian's work rather than someone who is more secularly focused. And those three elements or three characteristics you'll see is, one is that the Catholic historian will recognize and acknowledge the importance of the supernatural in the history of the world, right? A Catholic historian understands and sees, because of our faith, that God is involved in history, right? We don't have that kind of deist mentality where, you know, God created the world and then he just kind of sits back and watches us do our thing, right? We believe that God is actively involved in human history. In fact, history, you know, is kind of his story, right? It is the divine drama of God interacting with his people, and then obviously his people interacting with each other, with themselves, so to speak. But he is involved actively in history. And so certain things, certain historical events have a supernatural element to them. Classic or a good example of this is, and I mentioned this in the book, is Constantine, right? The emperor, before he's the emperor, Constantine, who's he's been declared emperor by his troops, but he's marching his troops down to Rome to meet his rival Maxentius for the title emperor, who's going to be considered emperor of the West. This is back in the 4th century. And, you know, he, as he's marching his troops across Gaul, they see a vision. There's this miraculous vision of a cross that appears in the sky, right? With this Latin phrase around it called that he saw. And he later, you know, told Eusebius of Caesarea, who wrote this account, that it said, in hoc signo vinces, right? In this sign, conquer. And he was startled by that. You know, he's not a Christian at the time. He's pagan. He has some Christians in his army, but he sees this as a sign of favor, a supernatural sign of favor from the Christian God that he's going to win this upcoming battle. And so he orders his troops to paint the symbol of the Chiro, the Greek monogram of Christ, on their shields. And so this Roman army is marching into battle against the rival Roman army with the Christian symbol on it. I mean, this is right. This is only a few years after the end of the great persecution by the Emperor Diocletian, when the Romans went out and slaughtered, you know, thousands of Christians. So that's a supernatural event. Now, a Catholic historian is going to say this was obviously, you know, a supernatural event. I mean, God had this vision. This vision was produced for Constantine and his troops. And we recognize that God was the author of that. You know, a more secular historian would see that event and say, well, yeah, there was something that happened that changed kind of Constantine's perspective. You know, the Christian accounts say that it was a supernatural divine sign. But, you know, there's also natural phenomena that could be used to explain what happened. He may have seen some kind of natural light, you know, phenomena in the sky, and they interpreted it as some kind of, you know, divine favor, and that's how it kind of changed his perspective, and he was able later on to go win the battle, you know, not through any divine favor. Whereas, you know, a Catholic historian, again, would say, you know, he won the battle because God said he was going to win the battle and because he trusted that was what was going to happen. You know, so that's one of the characteristics, recognizing the supernatural, right, in historical events. The second is to understand, the second and third are kind of linked together, is that it's understanding the importance of the saints, right? The actions and the lives of the saints in history, not just in church history, but in you know, Western civilization. I mean, you have Saint Benedict, for example, and who created, you know, the Western form of monasticism and spread his monasteries throughout Europe at a time when Europe was in a state of great chaos following the collapse of the Western Roman Empire. And so his actions, you know, not only built up the church and built up this monastic system, but also really preserved Western culture, Western civilization, through his monks copying in their scriptoriums all of the ancient manuscripts. So the lives of the saints are exceptionally important and have to be highlighted in any history of the church, but also Western civilization. And the last element is, you know, the role and importance of the papacy, right? I mean, popes from, you know, the early days of the church's history until the modern world have a very unique role in Western civilization and the history of the church and the history of Western civilization. And they have done some, you know, not only spiritually important things, but also some extremely important political and secular things as well. You know, a classic modern example of that is St. John Paul II's pontificate and his interaction, especially with the fall of communism and, you know, the Soviet bloc. So, you know, a Catholic historian is going to recognize that and see that, that these popes not only had this influence, which secular historians might acknowledge, but a Catholic historian would say, you know, the pope, these popes had this influence because of their faith, right? Because of their vote, because of their calling to that highest office in the church and the grace that was associated with that office.
Yeah, that last example is really good too, because I'm sure if someone picked up a modern history of the Cold War or, you know, the collapse of the Soviet Union, John Paul II would probably be like a sidebar, you know, or a side story. Not really important. You know, they'd probably focus more on the geopolitical or military or economic aspect, which is fine. But it shows that, like, a secular historian has a different set of priorities. And in a way, it kind of fails to see the spiritual side of things.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, the key for people to always keep in mind, right, is that every historian has a viewpoint. I mean, any historian, whether he's, you know, a faith-believing historian or a secular historian, has a viewpoint. And if they tell you they don't, they're lying, right? I mean, everybody has a viewpoint that they approach to their work. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not objective. That doesn't mean that you don't, you know, question the sources and you know, cooperate sources and do everything that is required, you know, in the academic scholarly community. But and with, you know, those kinds of standards. However, you know, you have a viewpoint and you bring that to your work. And so, you know, as I brought my viewpoint to the work, you know, I'm a Catholic, you know, I practice my faith and so, you know, I bring that to the forefront. And so, you know, how I choose to tell the story of the church, the different events and people that I highlight, you know, the narrative that's crafted as a result of that is influenced by that, you know, and you have to be very upfront with that. And so if you run into historians who aren't upfront with their viewpoint, you probably want to stay away from them because there might be some kind of agenda that they're hiding and don't want you to know about. But any real authentic historian will tell you his viewpoint right up front.
Right. Absolutely. Well, we're talking with Steve Wydenkopf about his awesome book, Timeless, A History of the Catholic Church. If you want to join in, maybe you have a question about church history, give us a call, 888-526-2151. And we'll be talking about more church history on the other side of this break. You're listening to Hands On Apologetics. Stay tuned.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, catholicrc.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. I'm talking with my good friend and incredible author, Steve Weidenkopf, on his new book, Timeless, History of the Catholic Church. And Steve, you know, people don't realize this, but I think one of the problems about writing a book isn't what you're going to put down on paper, it's what you're going to leave out. And, you know, it just blows my mind that you've written this book. And by the way, like, as I'm showing the people watching on live stream, this is not like a super thick book. This is a very readable volume. How you're able to accomplish covering 2,000 years in a readable volume. How did you choose what to include, what not to include?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, there's obviously when I finished the manuscript, it was significantly bigger than the book you're holding, and so there was a lot that I had to go back and cut myself, frankly.
Right.
And I was worried when I submitted it to our Sunday Visitor that it was going to be a little bit too big, that they might, you know, balk at that. And, you know, but thankfully, to their credit, they were good with the size. And I think the way that they formatted it and had it printed, that makes it, you know, not so thick and not so easy or not so difficult to read. And, you know, just to highlight too, you know, there's 10 chapters in the book, and then, but I've tried to structure each chapter so that there are sections within each chapter. So the book is broken up in a way that I think is easy to read in terms of its formatting. So, you know, you can pick up the book and read through the first couple of chapters or first chapter or so and read a few sections, and you can put the book down and come back to it later and pick right up where you left off with a new section. And so it doesn't require, you know, a constant focus for several days in order to maintain your, you know, your understanding of the material kind of thing. And I did that on purpose, right? Because I know that people are busy, and I know that the tome was going to be a bit, you know, full of a lot of things, because like you said, it's 2,000 years to cover. So I tried to structure it in a way that made it easy for people to read. But yeah, there still are, you know, things that you leave out or things that you cover maybe only in summary and not as much detail as you would like. And, you know, then on the converse of that, there are some elements, you know, the things that are obviously I think are important for Catholics in the modern world to know that I didn't highlight and talked about extensively. So, you know, a lot of those things that historical events that are sometimes mischaracterized, and there are a lot of myths associated with them, like the Crusades and the Inquisition, you know, the kind of your typical ones. I spent a bit more time and detail on those subjects in the book than I did for other things, for example. So, you know, it's always, you know, each historian brings to their own perspective. We were talking about this earlier before the break, right? Of what they're interested in. And, you know, I'm very much interested in the medieval period of time and the crusading movement. So I'm going to cover that a bit extensively in the book, but you know, there are other things that I highlight as well, that I think, again, that Catholics need to know and to focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially those who want to defend the faith, you know, it's, you absolutely need to know certain things, which is one of the things I appreciated with the book. Like you said, you highlight Crusades. That's something people, you know, there's so many canards and misunderstandings. The Inquisition, Spanish Inquisition, again, many distortions, so on. And but we should also have a good overview, too, of how everything fits and there's a flow. And I think you accomplished that with the book, because it really, it's almost like an action-adventure novel where, you know, you start at the beginning and it's like this whole adventure kind of unravels from there. Did a great job.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, I wanted to write this book in a narrative way, right, to tell basically in a story way. Because so many people, you know, come to or when they hear church history or even just history, right, there are those who are really, really interested in the subject and so they like it. But then there are many, many people who, you know, find history kind of boring, frankly. I mean, they find it to be just, you know, names, dates, and events, and there's no kind of real personal connection to them. So why should they be interested in this? And unfortunately, that's probably, you know, a lot of people are taught history that way, right, in school. And, you know, we memorize, or we're taught a certain, you know, historical event, or we take a history class and it's all about memorizing the names, dates, and events to pass the test. And then we forget it right after we've passed the test. So, and that does this a disservice, I think, to history and to the men and women who have come before us, because that's not really what history is. You know, up until the 19th century, history was seen as a subject in the university as literature, and as a form of literature, of telling the story of a group of people. That's really what history is. And then some more objective things come into it. And some, you know, in the 19th century with some German historians, it becomes more focused on, you know, sources and manuscripts and manuscript criticisms and things like that, all of which are important and help contribute to the, you know, the science of history. But I think that too often in the modern world too, we lose sight of that background of history as literature. Not that it's false or not that it's fiction, but that you can write history in a way that is engaging to people in a story. And, you know, I take really my kind of inspiration for that way of writing from Christ himself, right? This is how Christ taught. He, you know, to his disciples, he was very direct and spoke very, you know, directly and plainly. But to the masses of people, you know, we read in the Gospels, man, what did he do? He told stories, right? To illustrate spiritual truths, he told stories to people in the parables so that people could remember them, because that's how we're built, right? That's how we're created, rather, that God, you know, is the ultimate storyteller, and we love stories and we love to share stories, and that's how we remember things, is through stories. So that was the perspective I wanted to bring to the book and to the subject matter.
Beautiful. Yeah. And you did a great job too. Well, I'm not going to have you on the show and not start picking your brain on history. So, well, let's go to the particulars. Steve, what would you say was the most pivotal event, let's say, after the death of the last apostle to the conversion of Constantine?
Ooh, the most pivotal event from the death of the apostle to the... Well, I mean, I think kind of just right off the top of my head, it would obviously be, I think, the missionary efforts, right, of the church. I mean, right after... Right after, you know, the death of the apostle, the faith continuing to spread throughout the Roman Empire. I mean, that's really important, because, you know, you have this, without the missionary aspect, without the spread of the gospel throughout the Roman Empire, you know, maybe the faith would just have considered or can still be considered or have been considered by the Romans, you know, just this kind of, you know, sect of Judaism, and they wouldn't have even bothered with it. But the fact that you had the spread, especially through St. Paul and his missionary journeys, and then not only that, but you have so many unknown and unnamed Christians, right, who continue to spread the gospel, not only by word, but even more importantly, through witness, right, and through the witness of martyrdom. So when you have that persecution of the Roman Empire, it's that martyrdom of those Christians there. That's probably actually the most pivotal event, I would think, would be all the persecutions, but then the martyrdom, the witness of the Christians, that then changed, you know, the Roman mindset, or at least among the people, many of the people, the Roman mindset about the faith. And it became something much greater than just, oh, this is some kind of backward thinking or backward way of life from this, you know, province. It's all the way out in the far ranges or the far reaches of the empire. Now it becomes something that people within the capital of the empire itself is embracing, and it spreads, right, because it's the truth. So yeah, probably the witness of the martyrs really is the most, and in the book, I go through the, you know, the major Roman persecutions, give a background as to why they started and who the emperor was, and then, you know, try to highlight some of those witnesses, those martyrs that gave the ultimate sacrifice, in their life, right, for their love of Christ and the church. You know, we recognize them in the liturgy, but I think sometimes we fail to recognize their global impact, right, to the point that, you know, if they hadn't witnessed to such a level, right, their love of Christ and the church, I mean, would the church be where it is today? You know, I mean, it's really a what if kind of question, but it's a great great way to focus on that and to really question ourselves, right, and say, could we have done that, right, or if called upon in today's world, would we do that? So it really makes it a sobering assessment even for ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to the pagan mind, it must have been bizarre that people would give up their lives? Why not just worship a God? You know, it doesn't matter which God you worship, you know, or why follow a dead leader? But people, like you said, were willing to lay down their lives.
Right. Yeah. Why not just give a pinch of incense? Right. I mean, what's the big deal kind of thing? And,
right.
But it radically changed, you know, I mean, their witness radically changed the people's lives. And again, in the book, I say that too, about the different pagan authors that attacked the Christians in various books, right. In order to convince the Romans to not convert and become Christian. And I give a lot of their rationale, right, of their attacks. It's, you know, this unreasonable doctrine. I mean, what do you mean that God is both, you know, man and God? You know, how could that possibly be? Or, you know, why do you worship, like you said, this somebody who was crucified as a criminal? You know, that's just silly. Or what is this Eucharist thing that you eat? You know, I mean, that's so, it really did kind of, it was a bizarre, you know, thing, a bizarre organization, a bizarre group for the pagan mind. But ultimately, that Witness of the Martyrs was able to convert that pagan society into a Christian one.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that a secular historian would have just blipped over, you know, just be, you know, maybe a sentence or two. People were martyred and so on. And, you know, let's get back to politics.
Exactly. Yeah. No. Yeah. But that's when you bring it, when you bring that faith perspective, right, to the subject matter, you can delve into those questions a bit more. And I think, you know, again, the Catholic historian has an ability to because of one's faith, right, to understand the subject a bit more and to realize, oh, sure, now this makes sense why these people did what they did or why they believed what they believed, you know, and that comes into play an awful lot. And I know we've talked about this in the past when we get to the crusading movement, you know, forwarding several centuries into the future from the early Christians. But, you know, people could ask the question, why did these people leave their home, their families, and travel 2,000 miles away to the Holy Land to try to restore that land for Christ and to protect, you know, pilgrims and protect indigenous Christians in those areas? You know, why would they do it? And so a secular historian looks at it from, well, there has to be some kind of secular reason, right? Some temporal reason for this. It must have been money. It must have been fame or glory. It must have been, you know, something like that.
Right.
Whereas a Catholic historian will look at it and say, well, you know, I mean, they left us writings as to why they decided to do it. And more often than not, the writings indicate they went because they, you know, of the spiritual privilege of being given the indulgence, because they were concerned for their own salvation. And this was a unique spiritual opportunity for them. They did it out of love for God and the church.
Absolutely. So, well, I hear the music coming up. We're talking to Steve Weidenkopf about history. So stay tuned. Hands on Apologetics. We'll have more history on the other side of the break.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. We're talking to historian Steve Weidenkopf about his new book, Timeless, A History of the Catholic Church. And it's a great one-volume read. I highly recommend it. And before we continue, Steve, we have a call. Richard, welcome to Hands-On Apologetics.
What are some of the recorded martyrs, say, since the Cristeros War by the communists in Mexico? Has there been any in recent history, say, the last 50, 60 years?
Okay. Did you hear that, Steve?
I only heard the last part of that. So could you maybe repeat that for me, Gary?
Okay. Well, Richard, correct me because it was a little choppy on my end, too. You said that there's been modern martyrs like the Cristeros and things like that. I think you were asking about, has there been any recent martyrs in the last 50 years or so? I'm sure there are martyrdoms, but I think he's talking about canonized martyrdoms? Or martyrs, I mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I got it. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There have been, especially you mentioned the Cristeros, definitely in that time period, I know that there have been many cases that have been opened concerning martyrs from that period of time when the Mexican, socialist government persecuted the church quite horrifically, actually, in the early 20th century. And, one of the most famous martyrs from that period of time is the Jesuit Blessed Miguel Pro, who was a Jesuit priest who, despite the difficulty in doing so, continued to remain in Mexico and minister to the people clandestinely there, was found out, was arrested, and was executed in a way to kind of demoralize the Catholic population. The socialist anti-Catholic government there made sure to record his execution. They had photographers and journalists there to record it, and there's a famous picture of Blessed Pro who is right before his execution, he was executed by a firing squad. Right before he died, he put his arms out into the form of a cross and yelled out, "Viva Cristo Rey," right before long live Christ the King, right before he was killed. And then they distributed that picture, the government did, throughout Mexico, and it actually did the opposite effect of what they wanted. Again, they hoped that it would demoralize the people, but it encouraged the people more because of the witness of this great and heroic and holy priest. Then the government had to turn around and ban the picture from publication. So, you can't mess with God with these kinds of things, right? God will always have the last laugh. But there is that, and there's definitely the witness of Blessed Miguel Pro. And I know there's also been many, many witnesses and martyrdoms of those in Spain. About maybe 15 so years after what you're seeing in what we just talked about, Mexico and Spain, too, you have a huge civil war between, Republican forces and nationalist forces. And, those are basically communist and socialist forces versus those who are more attached to the monarchy or to a more, traditional conservative form of government and society. And so, Spain tore itself apart, and there are parts of Spain that were just absolutely devastated. The church was devastated in parts of Spain where, priests and religious nuns and monks were executed in the thousands by those who were, the socialists and communists in that area. So, many of them have been canonized, I know, and there's still many, I think, cases that are open that the Congregation for Saints is still looking at, and hopefully they will be one day recognized as, as martyrs as well, canonically from the church. But a fantastic book, actually. And I do talk about the Spanish Civil War a bit in Timeless, but if you're really interested in the subject in more detail, fantastic book is called The Last Crusade, written by Warren Carroll, again, the founder of Christendom College. And he goes through and talks about many of the different people there who gave the ultimate witness for their love of Christ and the church in that time period.
Richard, any follow-up question?
No, that's great. Thank you for your time.
All right. Well, thanks for calling. Yeah. Actually, it brings up an interesting point. Like, how far does timeless go? Obviously, it starts with, New Testament, right? It's time of Christ and the missionary journeys and so on. Then it continues on. Up to what point?
Yeah, so I start the book, in the traditional historical birthday of the church, which is Pentecost. So
right.
I start with the story of Pentecost and go all the way through the modern era up into, the pontificate of really kind of Pope Benedict the 16th. So And even that, when I get to the 20th century, the more modern era, kind of the major detail, I end with the pontificate of St. John Paul II. So I mentioned Benedict and Francis, but it's very, very summary, right? Because we're in an area of time where most people are very familiar with that period of time, have lived through it. And so I don't spend as much time in the book on that period of time. And I end the book really with kind of an exhortation to Catholics to learn our history, to know it so that we can be more effective evangelists, right, and witnesses in the world of our faith and of the church. And I take a look at this fantastic book, which I know most people probably have never heard of, let alone have read, but it's a really very fascinating book. And it was written by Hilaire Belloc, who was a 20th century Catholic historian, politician in England. And he wrote a book back in 1929 called Survivals and New Arrivals. And you might still be able to find it in print and various things. But the whole purpose of that book for Belloc was to look at what he saw were the attacks against the church in the foreseeable future and in the far distant future. So he looked at what he called were survivals, those attacks, those things or groups that were attacking the church, that are holdovers from several centuries in the past that continue to impact the church in the modern world. And then he looked at what he considered those are survivals. And then he looked at what he called new arrivals, which is what's going to happen in the far distant future. What are going to be the new things that come to attack the church? And fascinatingly enough, he talked about this thing called the neo-paganism. Now, he thought that the Western world was going to embrace neo-paganism. The words paganism, like it was in the olden days, believing false gods and creating your own morality and that kind of thing, but it would be new, right? So hence the word neo in front of it, because it's paganism now growing up in a post-Christian world. And he highlighted that how you know that we're in the midst of neo-paganism is that the center of the attack is going to be on marriage and family. And he's writing in 1929 when he comes up with when he sees this. It's quite prophetic. So anyways, I give a little bit of a discussion on that in the book about, what he's saying and how I think it's relevant for the history of the church in the modern world and what we as Catholics can do, right? And in our little part to spread Christ's light and gospel throughout the world despite all these things that are happening in the modern world.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't he also predict the rebirth of Islam?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, in a book called "The Great Heresies," and he talks about it a bit in "Survivals and Arrivals," I think. But definitely in "The Great Heresies," yeah, he talks about the resurgence of Islam, and that one he wrote a few years after "Survivals and New Arrivals," so in the 30s. And people, criticized, laughed at him, frankly, for that in the 30s, right? The Islamic world, the Ottoman Turkish Empire had fallen apart at the end of the First World War. Most of those Muslim countries were heavily controlled by, Western countries, and the West was in ascendance again, with the British Empire and the Second World War. And there's no way that even before the Second World War, he's writing, right, that there's no way that Islam is ever going to be a major factor again in the life of the world. And so when he wrote that, he said, no, that's not true. Once again, Islam will rise and will continue its pursuit of world domination in the name of Allah. And he was laughed at for writing that. But he really, again, once again, proved prophetic.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you should know better than I. Doesn't studying history ultimately kind of help you understand, where we're headed for and what kind of things we're going to run into in the near future?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, one of the things in the beginning of the book, and I mentioned an introduction, I have this little section of, you know, why is it important to study church history? Why should we study it? And I give a multitude of different reasons, and many of which we've talked about in our time together today. But one is what you just highlighted, right, is that we really cannot understand our own world if we do not understand our history, if we haven't, you know, understood the actions of the men and women who have come before us. They help us, knowing their story, help us understand why the world is the way the world is today. And if we don't know that, right, if we're kind of lost and just stuck in this mindset of looking at the current world and in 30-second sound bites and not paying attention to what came before us, then we're not only, you know, not only are we apt necessarily to make some of the same mistakes, but even more than that, we lack a fundamental understanding of how the world is today. And if we don't know that, then we really can't influence the future, right, in an authentic way. It really handicaps us in many ways. And so, and I think that, you know, whether it's, you know, political history or military history or religious history, if we don't understand that history, then we can't make sense of our world today at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Steve, where can people get a hold of a copy of Timeless History of the Catholic Church?
Well, Timeless is published by Our Sunday Visitor, so a good way to get a copy is to go to Our Sunday Visitor. Their website, their shop is osvcatholicbookstore.com. And they do offer free shipping, so you can get the book there. Or it's also available on Amazon and, you know, any good Catholic bookstore. Barnes & Noble, I think, carries it as well.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, Gary. Thanks. Great talking to you again.
Yep. Take care. And that was Steve Weidenkopf on Timeless. If you want a one-volume work on church history, just to gain an overview, but also, you know, he touches on some really important issues for those, you know, who want to defend the faith. There's so many different areas of history that it's just commonly distorted, and there's myths and so on. He kind of unpacks that, and like I said, it's a great read. So I highly recommend this book. Hard Sunday Visitor, you can get it on Amazon as well. Great stuff. So anyway, moving on, I just want to remind everybody that February 20th, I am going to be leaving the Midwest Command Center here in snowy, cold southeast Michigan, flying out to California. And we're going to be doing Hands-On Apologetics live in studio. So I'm going to be giving my show in the nice, freshly minted studio of Virgin Most Powerful's world headquarters. And also on the 20th, by the way, that's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. On Wednesday, February 20th, I'm going to be giving a talk at historic Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina, California, 7 p.m. There's no charge or admittance. You can just come on in, bring your Bibles, bring your notepad, because we're going to be talking about why appeals to the Bible with Protestants often fail and how you can make your arguments successful. It's going to be a lot of fun. If you live in Southern California, love to see you if you can make it. I have my books and CDs. It's going to be a lot of fun. Also, this week, got some great guests. I mean, Stephen Weidenkopf was awesome, but we're going to have William Albrecht's going to come back to the dojo. We're going to talk about early church. Troy Guy, who's an up-and-coming convert to the Catholic faith. We're going to talk about his journey to the faith. And finally, Friday, we're going to have Dr. Brian Bradford. Has a fascinating thesis that he wrote on Islam and the Christian roots of some of their beliefs. So it's time for me to shut down the power here at the Midwest Command Center. Coming up next, the dynamic duo of Catholic Talk Radio, Terry and Jesse Show. Thank you for listening, everybody. God bless.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church, So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.